Hi. So I just wanted to expand a little bit on a case that I tweeted a few images and comments about, which actually got a fair bit of interest and a lot of exchange, and I think it's quite an interesting case in the discussion around pulmonary embolism. So I took the service one morning and inherited a patient that had been admitted overnight from the emergency room, and it was a 50-ish-year-old man, previously well, who'd consulted for dyspepsia a week prior at another institution, and probably by abdominal ultrasound had been found to have some liver abnormalities, and ended up getting a gastroscopy and a liver biopsy for what seemed like extensive liver masses, and was sent home. And then the night of the admission had presyncopal episodes and came into the ER and was quite rapidly diagnosed with a massive pulmonary embolism. Sometime in the middle of the night, it was discussed and decided not to thrombolize because he wasn't in, let's say, overt frank shock, and because of his recent liver biopsy, which was 3 days prior to him showing up. So I inherit him in the morning, and his heart rate is about 130, his BP is about 105 to 110 systolic, his respiratory rate is about 35, and his LLS score is at least 0.5. His lactate at initial presentation was like 5 point something, and by the morning it was down to 4 point something. He was on no vasopressors, and had gotten some fluids. Fortunately, not too much, period. So on bedside ultrasound, he had initially, I always start with the IVC, and he had a very difficult to find IVC in the intrahepatic section, and the more I looked, I finally did find it, and it was essentially virtual. That because his IVC, his liver was essentially full of masses, full of mets. We just don't have a final tissue, but essentially he's full of mets. He had severe RV dysfunction with a massively dilated RV with a TAPSE that was around 10, 11 millimeters. A flattened septum, an underfilled LV. LVEF was obviously a normal or hyper, and some nice paradoxical septal motion. And he looked fairly bad. So at this point, he'd been infused heparin for a handful of hours, and he said he was feeling a bit better than the previous night. So I decided to sit on it for a few hours and see which way things were going. And the other thing that was visible on the ultrasound is that subhepatic, the IVC, was full and dilated. And although visibility wasn't great south of the liver, I could see enough segment that there seemed to be a clot in the IVC. Obviously, this makes a lot of sense. You've got this IVC compression in the liver that's probably been going on for a while. You've got a hypercoagulable state because this is, you know, undeniably or almost 100% cancer. And so he'd thrombosed his infrahepatic IVC. And at some point, some of the clot had clearly gone past the partial obstruction and embolized. In terms of the embolization, the CT showed extensive saddle embolism with some remnant perfusion to the right lower lobe, if any. That was basically what was keeping him alive. So the day advanced and he wasn't getting much better. So I elected to scan his head to make sure there wasn't anything in the brain. To me, the liver biopsy was a relative contraindication, and a hepatic intra-abdominal bleed was preferable to cardiovascular collapse. His heart rate crept up to 140. His resp rate stayed right around near 40. So I decided to lyse him after the CT head was indeed negative. I decided to go with a regimen of a small bolus, followed by infusion, and my hope was that he would have a relatively rapid moment of improvement, and that I could taper off or stop the TPA at that point. So I elected to go with a 15 milligram bolus, followed by a 5 milligram per hour infusion. And this was sort of an evening to overnight thing. So what he had as improvement was really gradual. So there wasn't the cutoff point that I could have stopped. So he ended up getting a total of 70 or 75 milligrams of TPA. And in terms of respiratory support, he was on 10 liters of oxygen to start with. He was not on. He was not intubated or on positive pressure. So by the morning, he was already quite a bit better. He's down to 2 or 3 liters of oxygen, and feeling a fair bit better. Heart rate was down to 110, 115. Resp rate was down to like 25 to 30, and his LLS score was a little bit better, probably zero. I had also elected to, when I lysed, to try to catch that moment of rapid improvement in case there was, I had put him on end-tidal CO2 nasal cannula, and at that point his end-tidal CO2 was 15, but then obviously as his respiratory rate dropped, then the end-tidal increased, so it became not so useful, but it did increase in the first hour or so by a couple points without much of a decrease in respiratory rate. I also put cerebral and somatic tissue saturation monitors, which to me was quite interesting. He started off with a cerebral sat right around 50 and a thigh sat around 60. And in the course of the lysis, he went up to cerebral sats in the low 60s and tissue sats in the low 70s. So those things actually had a nice improvement in their markings. So he did well from the PE standpoint. Now part two of this case revolves around the IVC clot, and I tweeted it out a couple of days ago as a question, you know, because I felt a little bit uneasy about having this amount of clot sitting just below a partial obstruction. And I think you have to keep in mind that this isn't a fixed obstruction made of cement. You know, this is a heavy liver pressing on a pliable structure. So changes in intra-abdominal and intrathoracic pressures could, as it obviously did happen, result in an embolism. So my debate was around, should I put in a femoral catheter and drip in some TPA at a really low dose, a milligram an hour, something like that, and try to melt that stuff off slowly? Because at this point, Interventional had said they couldn't touch that without being able to put an IVC filter up downstream of it, so in the intrahepatic segment, which was impossible because of the compression. So IR couldn't do anything, and vascular couldn't do anything either. So, and of course, he's got a terrible disease, so the debate to me was that. And tossed around the idea a little bit, and so far, in the end, his fellow's still with us, we've decided not to, because if there is a complication, in a sense, it is a natural complication of just a terrible, terrible disease that we can do little to prevent. And the flip side is if we cause either loosening of that and embolism or a bleed of some kind, then, you know, we'll have actively harmed him. And I do see the the wisdom in that, and you know, I think that is an ethical decision. But I also know that if I was sitting there, and my personality perhaps being a little bit more aggressive, I would probably choose to try to lyse my own IVC clot of the size of a banana down to something a little more manageable if ever it was to embolize. But there's, you know, absolutely no evidence for this kind of stuff. And that's what a lot of people were talking about in some of these discussions, is that, well, is there any evidence for this? And once you get into such very, like, unique-ish cases, of course, there's no way you're ever going to find an RCT that says, well, you know, if someone's got a banana-sized IVC clot and they were randomized to this or that, this is the approach we should have. Of course not. This is where, you know, expert opinion and applied physiology really starts to kick in. So I'd love to hear any comments or questions, or if anyone has anything to add, that would be great. But I think it's a very interesting case, and I think it's such a large spectrum of disease, the pulmonary embolism, that there have been these lines arbitrarily drawn about, you know, what is submassive, what is massive, etc. Some of them with physiological echo data, some of them with not. And here I tried to look at tissue perfusion as well, which to me should be one of the markers of shock, you know, because the fact that you're not on vasopressors alone is not enough to say that you have no, you know, you have no shock. So I think it's really hard to, in these patients that are gray, it's not just a slight increase in the troponin in like the Pitho trial criteria. I think it's important to be able to modulate and see, you know, and take a clinical decision as to what you think is best for your patient and which way it should be done. The thrombolytic regimen is also something that's up for debate, whether you're using, you know, a straight full dose, a half dose, a small bolus and a drip. Who really knows? I don't think the data is out there either for some of these modulations, but I wanted to just share the physiological rationale, the clinical rationale, why I chose this particular way to do it, but not to say that a lesser drip, a bolus, would have been better or worse. Who knows? So again, love to hear any contributions of anyone who's had this type of case or had a different approach or who just thinks radically differently. Alrighty, thanks.